Bhagavad Gita lecture, 13th chapter, text number 23, given by Srila Arvinda Swarup Das in Philadelphia.
Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamaniti Namane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pascharcha Deishatarane Umagyanam timarandra syoganam jana shalakaya chakshurum vilitam jenam tasmai sri gurave namaha. I'm offering my obeisances to my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was standing in the midst of darkest ignorance. So this evening, here's a verse from chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita. 13th chapter is called Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. And this is text number 23. So what we do is I'll go through and say each word. And you can repeat it after me. In translation. Yet in this body, there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Supersoul. Now I'll read Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. He says, it is stated here that the Supersoul, who was always with the individual soul, is the representation of the Supreme Lord. He is not an ordinary living entity, because the monist philosophers take the knower of the body to be one. They think that there is no difference between the supersoul and the individual soul. To clarify this, the Lord says that he is represented as the Paramatma in every body. He is different from the individual soul. He is para. It's the last word in this verse, para. He is para, transcendental. The individual soul enjoys the activities of a particular field, that is to say, a body. But the super soul is present, not as finite enjoyer, nor as one taking part in bodily activities, but as the witness, overseer, permitter, and supreme enjoyer. His name is Paramatma, not Atma, and he is transcendental. It is distinctly clear that the Atma and the Paramatma are different. The Supersoul, the Paramatma, has legs and hands everywhere, but the individual soul does not. And because the Paramatma is the Supreme Lord, he is present within to sanction the individual soul's desiring material enjoyment. Without the sanction of the Supreme Soul, the individual soul cannot do anything. The individual is bhukta, or the sustained, and the Lord is bhokta, or the maintainer. There are innumerable living entities, and he is staying in them as a friend. The fact is that every individual living entity is eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and both of them are very intimately related as friends. But the living entity has the tendency to reject the sanction of the Supreme Lord and act independently in an attempt to dominate nature. And because he has this tendency, he is called the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord. The living entity can be situated either in the material energy or in the spiritual energy. As long as he is conditioned by the material energy, the Supreme Lord, as his friend, the Super Soul stays with him just to get him to return to the spiritual energy. The Lord is always eager to take him back to the spiritual energy, but due to his minute independence, the individual entity is continually rejecting the association of spiritual light. This misuse of independence is the cause of his material strife in the conditioned nature. The Lord, therefore, is always giving instruction from within and from without. From without, he gives instructions as stated in Bhagavad Gita, and from within, he tries to convince the living entity that his activities in the material field are not conducive to real happiness. Just give it up and turn your faith toward me, then you will be happy, he says. Thus the intelligent person who places his faith in the Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, begins to advance toward a blissful eternal life of knowledge. So, here the Lord is described in his feature, Paramatma. Yet in this body, means the body that we are situated in right now, each of us, that's already been explained in this chapter. The body has been described as the field of activities. And then there is the living entity who is the knower of this field. And now he says there's also a super knower. That in other words, in my body, there's two of us. There's me, and then there's someone else. I'm the Atma, the self, and then there is the self of all selves, the Paramatma. And that's what's being described here. The self of all selves, the soul of all souls. The supreme proprietor who exists as the overseer and permitter and who is known as the super soul. This Paramatma feature needs to be understood. Here he's being distinguished between the individual soul and the super soul. It is stated in Vedic literature, in Srimad Bhagavatam, that those who know the absolute truth, the ultimate source of everything, know this absolute truth in three features, as Brahman, as Paramatma, and as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahman means Brahma Jyoti, the undifferentiated effulgence of spiritual light. The know means they know by their own experience, by dint not only of study of spiritual literature, but also by direct spiritual attainment or spiritual experience. They encounter the Supreme as Brahman, as one without a second, without any differentiation, described as an ocean of undifferentiated light. This is one feature. But also, that same absolute truth is encountered also in another way, as Paramatma. That feature is described here in this verse as the super soul, as an individual consciousness superior to our own consciousness. In Brahman realization, there's a realization of the oneness of all spiritual existence. That oneness is there. For example, we're talking about two terms, Atma and Paramatma, but they share Atma. They're both Atma. So they have the same nature, the same spiritual nature. Both Atma and Paramatma are spiritual. And speaking in qualitative terms, there is no difference between them. Both are Brahman, both are spiritual, both are distinct from matter, both are eternal. But yet here's a distinction also made between Atma and Paramatma. So there's a further knowledge to be had. There's Brahman, and then there's Paramatma, that feature there. And then, of course, there is the feature called Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is Bhagavan. He's described everywhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Bhagavan said, Supreme Personality of Godhead said. And earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, that Bhagavan says to Krishna, Eka amshena stito jagat, with a single fragment of myself, Eka amsha, with a single fragment of myself, I am maintaining all these universes. So that fragment of Bhagavan is Paramatma. It's called Eka amsha. So here, this Paramatma is described as the representation of the Supreme Lord. What it is, Paramatma is, that is the Supreme Lord insofar as He is ensouling the universe and organizing and directing the course of the material energy and the souls in that material energy. Here, we read in the purport a distinction between different energies of the Lord. So I used the term earlier, absolute truth. Absolute truth means the ultimate source of all energies. Janmadasa yataha, in the Vedanta Sutra, very famous definition, what the absolute truth is, that from which everything is emanating. So that which emanates from the absolute truth is called the energy of the absolute truth. In Sanskrit, the word shakti is used for energy. To use a material example, the absolute truth may be compared to the sun, and the light and the heat of the sun may be compared to the energies of the absolute truth. So they excuse me, I have a little. So you have fire, and then you have the heat and light of fire. So the heat and the light are the energies of the fire, or heat and light is the energy of the sun. Now, in one sense, you cannot distinguish between the fire and the fire's energy. And what's the fire without the heat and the light? And yet, of course, I can sit at a distance from the fire and take advantage of the heat and light and not get burnt. So between a thing and its energies, there's a relationship of simultaneous oneness and difference. I wake up in the morning and I think, oh, the sun is in my room. But I don't mean the sun globe, the sun that the planet is burning on my carpet. It's just the sunlight. So in this way, there's this idea that in the same way as the sun gives off heat and light, so everything that we see is the energy of the absolute truth. And all that there is the absolute truth and the energies of the absolute truth. Krishna and Krishna's energies. When we say the word Hare Krishna, when we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, actually in one sense, Hare is addressed to all the energies of the Lord, and Krishna is the Lord Himself. Well, there you have it, that's all that there is. The Lord and the Lord's energies. So His energies are described in the Vedic literature, Parasya Shakta, Vividhaya, there's three energies. There's actually one, but it's manifest in three ways. As They're described as internal, external, and marginal. While spiritual, material, and borderline. We know what the material energy is here. This is here. Matter, which is called also Bahiranga Shakti, the external, outside energy of Krishna, the material energy of Krishna. And from this material energy we see the world around us. But it's also described in the Vedic literature that he has another energy which is called internal, interior, or spiritual energy, Antaranga Shakti. And from that energy is manifest another world, which is the spiritual world. Of this spiritual world, of course, there's not so much knowledge. Material scientists are expert at finding out a little bit about the material energy, but anything beyond that eludes the grasp of their methodology. But we have information from the Vedic literature of this spiritual energy, internal potency of Krishna. It creates another world, a spiritual world. Matter in the material energy, the distinction is everything in the material energy has a beginning and end in time. When things come into being, they're assembled, cobbled together in complicated structures, and they fall apart. So there's past, present, and future coming into being and going out of being. This is the characteristic of the material energy. The spiritual energy, the internal potency of Krishna, there is no coming into being or going out of being. There's no past, present, or future. Everything is eternal. This is the spiritual energy. Eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. But then there's a kind of little, shall we call, overlapping feature, which is called the marginal energy. Sanskrit called tatastha shakti. Tatastha means literally standing on the border or the bank. Like tatha means like the bank of a river. Situated on the border, borderline energy. And that's the living beings, the souls who are animating living bodies in this material world, down from Indragopa, a tiny germ, up to the largest devata, god, the demigod. All of these are little spiritual sparks of Krishna. They're called separated material, like fragmental parts and parcels. This is called jiva. So the souls are tatastha because although our nature is spiritual, we are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Souls have no beginning and no end. Krishna says, Nahanyate hanyamane sharire, is not slain when the body is slain. Yet we're living in the material world where everything is temporary. Therefore, tatastha, amphibious. We belong, actually, our nature is we belong in the spiritual world. But we are in exile and are living here in the external potency, the material world. We are misplaced. Because we can be like that, we're called borderline energy. None of us, all of us here in this material world, are misplaced. We're in the wrong place. And we are longing, according to the Vedic understanding, to go back to the spiritual energy. This coming here into the material world is a product of our individual free will. The Supreme Soul, Krishna, has all qualities, and freedom is one of them. He's supremely free. And the individual souls, ourselves, little fragmental parts and parcels, we are like tiny samples of Krishna. We are not God, but we are like God quality. Quantitatively distinct, but qualitatively the same. So he's got infinite freedom, and we have a little bitty, tiny little bit of freedom. And with that freedom, we decided that we wanted to try to enjoy in the material world separately from Krishna. Desire to become the Lord ourselves. So for that reason, we're here in this material world. We made a mistake, is what it amounts to. And now that we have evolved upward to inhabit human bodies, we can now hear about this mistake and do something about it. We've already been inhabiting all kinds of animal bodies, and there's nothing we can do except transmigrate from one species to another. But we have arrived now at human life, and the Vedanta Sutra says, Atato Brahma Jignasa, now that you have reached the human form of life, your business is inquiry into the absolute truth. This activity of spiritual inquiry, asking questions like, why am I here? Who am I? What am I doing in this body? How did I get here? What's the meaning of life? Does anything have a purpose? These kinds of questions we ask because of our higher consciousness. Animals are not capable of asking that question. Their consciousness is covered. But a human being, the consciousness is a little more developed. And at that point, we are also able to hear a little voice within. That little voice within is the voice of this Upadrasta, Anumanta, the super soul. When Krishna creates this material energy, he expands himself into another feature, which is called this super soul feature. There's a whole description of how this takes place in the Vedic literature. I won't go into it today, but it's very interesting. Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Shirodakshaya Vishnu, how the creation exactly takes place. But then finally, the Lord enters into the universe, is the soul of the universe, and is the super soul in the heart of all living creatures, in the heart of every atom also, is this Paramatma, the super soul. A single unitary intelligence running the whole universe. This, Krishna says, is Eka Amshena, a single fragment of myself. God has many, many more interesting and important things to do than just running a little universe. So this Paramatma is just a small activity of his. Otherwise, in the spiritual energy, he has many, many other interesting things to do. But this feature is super soul. So that super soul is running the whole material world. We are actually ourselves embodied in a particular body, and we are not able to do anything without the sanction of the super soul. It is the super soul who creates our fate or our destiny, who sees that we are rewarded the results of our good or our bad deeds. He is coordinating everything. And is very, very, very intelligent. Super intelligent. It's called the super soul. Material scientists, when they try to study the ultimate laws of material nature, are just trying to read a little bit of the intelligence of super soul. They're actually material science. They don't know. Everyone's looking for Krishna. And when people are sending higher and higher energy particles into atoms, breaking apart to see what's inside, it's up inside. Inside is Paramatma. Everyone is looking. People have this intuition that if we go somehow to the depths of the atom, and if we expand with our biggest instruments into the further reaches of the cosmos, somehow or other, at the ultimate end, we're going to discover that they're both the same thing there. That's Krishna. That's the Super Soul. In one sense, this whole cosmos is one organism, and the soul of that organism is the Super Soul. Everywhere are his eyes, everywhere are his legs, everywhere are his hands, everywhere his tongue. This is one feature of Krishna, this Paramatma. But people who know the methods of spiritual advancement can directly reach this Super Soul and can speak to the Super Soul and can listen to the Super Soul who is within our own hearts. This is said, they're intimately related as friends. Krishna describes this in another verse in Bhagavad Gita. He describes himself as the friend of all living entities, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. The well-wishing, Surid in Sanskrit means like an uncle, or somebody who's your superior but is taking care of you all the time, your well-wishing friend.
One who's
close to the heart, Surid, good heart. This is the position of the Super Soul. In the Upanishads, the same discussion in this verse, Svetashvatara Upanishad, is described in the form of a little allegory. It says there is a tree in which there are two birds. These two birds are always together, hopping from one branch to another. One bird is absorbed in eating the fruits of the tree, which are of two kinds, sweet and bitter. The other bird is going along with him, but he never eats. He just watches. The witnessing bird.
That's the Super Soul.
That's the Super Soul. The soul is there, going from tree branch to branch, like we change from one body to another. And in the different bodies, we meet with various enjoyments and suffering, which we are taking upon ourselves. Eating the sweet and bitter fruit of material life. For sometimes it tastes good, then it tastes bad, then it's good, then it's bad, then it's good, then it's bad. You'll notice this is what happens in people's lives. They always are looking for sustained, uninterrupted good, but what happens is it gets doled out to them, good, then bad, then good, then bad, then good. And sometimes the good lasts a long time, sometimes a short time, and the bad comes, and it's really out of their control. This is what it is. They never get good, 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 and it just keeps on going. That's the spiritual world. In the material world, it's going to be nice, then bad, then nice, then bad, then nice, then bad. You'll never get anything but that. So the living entity, he's eating these two fruits, hopping from branch, and the other one is just watching. That is the Super Soul. He's not involved. He's just the witness. And he's waiting for his presence to be recognized. So the Super Soul is there. According to the Vedic literature, we are situated in this body, which is made out of material energy. But we are the soul. Now, when I went to college, we were told that the soul was something that was metaphysical. And that was not meant as a word of praise. It meant that it was really a nonsense idea, since it was said that when you come to words like soul or God, no possible sense experience is relevant to establishing the truth or falsity of propositions with these words in it. You know, like I say, I am a soul. Well, how do you prove it? You know, what experiment are you going to do? Well, there is a God. What are you going to do? All the data fits, you know, one way or another. You know, no sense experience is going to show me the soul. You know. So it was decided that these were kind of metaphysical and cognitively meaningless statements. But when I read the Bhagavad Gita, heard from Srila Prabhupada, a very interesting idea for the soul. Because first of all, I realized all Western philosophy, first of all, they conflate the idea of the mind and the idea of the soul. And very clearly in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Vedic tradition, mind, what we call mind, is another form of matter. It's subtle matter. Manas, buddhi, ahankara are material elements, according to Bhagavad Gita. They're inferior material nature. And the soul is something beyond that, you know. Well, what is that? You know, it must be so rarefied. How could I ever contact the soul or know about it? But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the symptom of the soul is consciousness. As the sun lights up the universe, so the soul illuminates the body by consciousness. So this is an interesting point, because consciousness may be, in modern science, the biggest problem. Nobody knows what to do with it. On the one hand, in physics, it changes everything, because as soon as there's a conscious observer present, the wave packet becomes reduced, and all kinds of things happen in quantum mechanics. And yet, on the other hand, nobody can fit it in the scheme of things. It's an anomaly. And certain kinds of scientists are very busy, like these people in artificial intelligence, trying to prove that actually there is no such thing, that it can be systematically eliminated from all discourse, any reference to consciousness. It's just kind of ways of behavior. And that's really all you need to deal with. But consciousness, I think we know what it is. It's maybe that kind of thing that you have to know by your own direct experience, like we know what red is and green is because we have experiences of those things, and if you can't see them, then you won't know what we're talking about. Same with consciousness. Consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Otherwise, consciousness has, the soul has no contact with the material energy. They're two kinds of things. They don't really interact. Where the interaction takes place is through the agent of the supersoul, according to the Vedas. And that the supersoul is really operating everything, the body and the mind, for the sake of the soul. Granting all our material desires, making everything happening according to our own particular destiny, so that we can be the enjoyer or the sufferer. So the supersoul, we don't see anything without supersoul seeing it first. We don't hear anything without supersouls hearing it first. We don't taste anything without the supersoul tasting it first. He is the factor that links us to our own particular material body and sensory apparatus. It's by his constant presence that we are associated with his body and things are working. That's why he's called the Upadrasta, the overseer, and Anumanta, the permitter. Even if we want to commit sinful activities, we can't command material nature. We don't know how it's working. You know, it's, if you look and say, I have a desire comes in my mind to do something, say I want to lift my hand, and I lift my hand, and I say, you know, we don't think about it twice. But if somebody says to me, well, that's a neat trick, how did you lift your hand? And I say, I don't know. I have no idea. I put food in my mouth, and somehow or other it gets digested and metabolized. Somebody says, neat trick, how did you do it? I don't know. In fact, this whole complicated reaction of my mind and my body is going on around me. I take it for granted. And yet, somehow or other, I don't know how it works. Somebody has set me in the middle of this well-functioning machine that's doing everything for me and running it on my behalf. Otherwise, I can't tell you how I lift my arm. Neat trick, huh? How does it work? I have no idea.
But it does, it goes. Who's making it go? We would say, well, it just goes. But Krishna here says, Upadrasta Anumanta, the overseer and the permitter. He fulfills our, even if we have sinful desire, if that's what we want, Krishna says, okay, you eat the bad fruit, you eat the good fruit, that's what you want. But still, his presence is there. There's a current of suggestion coming from the super soul. And Prabhupada says, just give it up and turn your faith toward me. Give it up your eating the good and bad fruit. There's always a little suggestion coming from the super soul. Then you will be happy. So he goes with us in the material world, but he is always trying to influence us to again turn to him. When we understand that this turning away from him and getting involved in matter is a big mistake, and when in the depth of his heart the living entity says, I made a mistake, I'm ready to turn back, then the super soul takes action. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, I am situated in everyone's heart. We're running, like the material body in the Bhagavad Gita is called a yantra. That means a machine, a device. I am situated in the heart of every living entity. He says, from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He gives us, when we want to remember Krishna, we want to remember the Super Soul, he gives us remembrance. How do we forget God? How do we turn away from God? How do we become atheists? How do we become enjoyers in the material world? He gives it to us. There's so many arguments, very clever arguments, that there's no God, that everything happens by chance, the material world arises without any cause, very intelligent people put them forward, very intelligent people believe them. Where do these arguments come from? They actually come from Krishna. You want to forget me? I'll give you all the arguments and all the reason by which you can forget me. But if you want to remember me, then similarly, I'll give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. The Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam Krishna says, I'll give you the intelligence by which you come to me. I situated in your heart will destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And that's how we come to Krishna, by Krishna's arrangement. So the super soul is there. Krishna's there. He's in every experience that we have, Krishna is present. As long as we're absorbed in trying to enjoy the material world, we are not conscious of the presence of Krishna, of his involvement in every transaction, every thought, every deed. But he's there. As we become detached from this material world, this unfortunate place, and as we turn our attention more and more to Krishna, Krishna becomes revealed. Sometimes you've seen, maybe you've gone to the theater, and they have a way of, there'll be a background that's very dim and dark, and then they bring the lights up and you see the background comes out very, very strong and powerful. That's how they change sets, you know. So like that, when Krishna consciousness, this factor in all our experiences and activity, every experience we have is actually an experience of Krishna. We're not aware of it. That starts to come out more and more. And finally we understand, actually there's nothing but Sri Krishna. Our perception, our consciousness changes. And so here Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is telling us, yet in this body there's another transcendental enjoyer who is the Lord, the Supreme Proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Super Soul. This is the greatest person. There's no greater person, the most auspicious person, the best person to know, the best person to love, the person we've always wanted to be intimate with. And he says, I'm here in your body with you, and actually I am your best friend. You just don't know me. we know Krishna, if we understand Krishna, we move into relationship with Krishna, then actually all our desires for all relationships are permanently and forever satisfied. So he's telling us this. He teaches us from outside, when he comes and speaks the Bhagavad Gita, from the devotees who have a relationship with Krishna, who tell us about Krishna, from the outside also, and from within our own hearts. He's prompting us all the time. Come to me, come to me, come to me. He doesn't interfere with our freedom. We can say, no, no, no. And Krishna, all right, he just goes along. Next life, next ill, always there. But when you're ready to turn to him, then all of a sudden, all paths open up. And that's his position. Thank you very much. Yes.
Just before the committing of all sinful activities.
I'm sorry, can you?
Just before committing of all sinful activities, even the Lord says, do not do it.
Yeah, the voice of conscience, yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's present to us as conscience. It's wrong, it's right, yeah.
That's a soul, right?
The super
soul. That is
the
super soul. There is another verse in the Bhagavad Gita that is saying that all the activities are done by the super soul.
Yeah.
And it says, Prakriti kriyamanani gunani karmani sarvasya ahankara vimudatma karta hamiti.
It says that all the activities of material nature, they are being carried out by Krishna, by the super soul. He is the doer. But it says ahankara vimudatma, but befooled by false ego, the living entity says karta aham. I am the doer. That's what we think. Somebody becomes very proud. I have a big brain. I win the Nobel Prize. I am the doer. Who gave you a big brain? How did you? What did you do? I've won the Olympic Games because I have such a coordinated, well-organized body. Where did you get your ability from? That's being done by Krishna. We take credit. Yes.
Just a comment on the terms. Number one, you were saying a soul being the enjoyer. Now the term enjoyer is usually relates to the experience of senses. Term suffering usually relates to the senses. Material suffers, material enjoys. But when we are using the term enjoyer for the soul, that means if the soul can be the enjoyer, and soul should be capable of suffering or its enjoys. So would you have a comment on that?
Yes. The soul actually does not enjoy or does not suffer. But because of illusory superimposition, that he has accepted the body as the self, then he falsely thinks that he is enjoying or he is suffering. If you fall asleep at night and you have an evil dream or a bad dream, a nightmare, so in your nightmare you've created a dream body, and that dream body is being bitten by snakes, and you're trying to scramble away and climb up the side of the pit, and the snakes are coming at you, and then you wake up and you're safe, you're in your own bed. You were not suffering, you were always, but somehow or other, because you had falsely identified yourself with the dream body, you had accepted this illusion and therefore falsely taken on this idea that I'm suffering. Well, in the same way, enjoying. So the soul is actually transcendental. He doesn't enjoy, he doesn't suffer in the material world. But once we falsely identify ourselves with the material body, when the body grows old, we think, now I'm growing old, now I'm dying, and then people seem to suffer. Okay?
Yeah, but my question was that in that you said I am the enjoyer. When you say I am the enjoyer, I was referring to the soul, not to the body.
No, he means he thinks I am the enjoyer, I think I am the sufferer. Not reference to the soul. As he said, karitaham iti manyate, ahankara vimudhatma. He has become bewildered by ahankara, and therefore he thinks, kartaham, I am the doer, which means I am the enjoyer, I am the sufferer.
Okay, in the same context, when you said that Paramatma, or the Supreme Soul, can take his body by own free will, again the term will implying to the soul is again, I mean, so we are using the term will, which is a will of body. I mean to say, when you say a free will, a soul taking birth by its own free will, that means souls carry their wills with them. That is, you can buy that, you know.
So, yeah, so far as I understand, it is the characteristic of a soul. The soul also has a certain amount of that he has some freedom because he can choose how he wishes to be controlled by Krishna, directly and favorably, under the internal potency and in devotional service, or indirectly and unfavorably, he's controlled by the material energy. So that choice, how do I wish to be controlled by Krishna, that choice is actually made by the soul. So far as we understand. So that, for example, when Krishna is telling Arjuna, you know, I want you to obey my order, he's asking him to change from one way. He's saying to him, you'll have to fight this battle no matter what happens. Whether you like it or not, you'll have to fight this battle. But how you fight it, whether you're impelled by the modes of material nature, or whether you fight it because I'm asking you and you've become my instrument, voluntarily, that's your decision. He said, now I've explained everything to you, and now you do what you wish to do, Krishna says. You do what you wish to do. That's his words in Bhagavad Gita. What is it?
Yeah.
But
as a father, like, I will give some freedom to my son, but
Yeah.
I will not give my child to the extent where I find that the child is not going to burn himself or do something. Mm-hmm. At that point, I will come and say, hey, mm-hmm. you stop it here. Mm-hmm. You are going too far. I gave you the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
In many, you know, crimes are being committed and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Is Krishna giving a complete, absolute free will? Okay, I'm not going to stop even at that point, I mean to say.
Well, so far as I know, here they also, he places limits. Yeah, otherwise, if we gave everybody absolute freedom to gratify all the desires at once, I think we'd all be in very bad shape. So I don't know how he runs things exactly. That's his business, but I think there are limits placed all the time. Otherwise, we would have be having a much harder time than we are even so far.
I was just thinking that what kind of father I should be to allow, you know, how much I can allow.
I think he protects us as much as he can, but sometimes, you know, sometimes you can't stop them. I'm getting the signal that we have to stop now. We have to set up prasadam, and then at 7:30 we want to clear the room, and there'll be another RT. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Stop devoting to our country.